your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, and that's me. I am your host here on September 7th. It's the first Sunday in September. I guess it's not officially fall yet, but it is the first Sunday as we hit the official part of the national election for president. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, the official part of the national election for president, the final 8 weeks. Woo-hoo! Oh, I feel like I've just been released from some trauma. Let me take a moment here and thank the folks at WVTF. You can check them out at other times of the day. Programming brought to you in the evening, supported by WVTF, the clear choice for NPR news and information in Charlottesville. WVTF is at 88.5 in town and 89.3 west of town and in the valley. WVTF is heard in the Lynchburg area on 89.1 and in Lexington on 101.9. So if for some reason you're not interested in WNRN, since we play all kinds of tunes and talk, check out WVTF. All right, our guests today, the regular folks here on my program to talk politics. Let's fire up the proper buttons and introduce my man, Pete Ronayne. Pete, how are you?
Doing well. Good morning, Rick. Pleasure
Thank
to be here.
Thank you for taking time to be here.
Sure.
And Jim Sofka.
Good morning, Rick.
We got to turn that up a little bit. We got to turn that up just a little. Let me try this. One more time.
Good morning, Rick. How you doing?
Oh, I'm okay. But we could use Deepak in here to turn that up just a little bit to help me out. But we will get that. Deepak is here today to put your calls through as we get into the program. And just so we can get while we work at that, Jim, you work where?
I'm an adjunct faculty member at the Federal Executive Institute.
And where is the Federal Executive Institute?
Right up on Emmett Street. And Pete's my colleague and also the dean of the Leadership for a Democratic Society program there. So we're both sort of, wear different hats there, but always happy to come in and talk politics.
Well, and that's much appreciated on my part as well. And Pete, we tossed around some official titles there.
Yes.
Yes. Jim, are you an author?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. Because I didn't want to make you feel bad sitting next to Pete, because I know that Pete is an author as well.
Jim and I both have the pleasure of writing and speaking broadly. And as you mentioned, I'm the dean of the faculty at the Federal Executive Institute and teach as an adjunct at the University of Virginia.
All right. Well, that lays the groundwork for why I invited you guys in. I didn't just run into you at like Barnes & Noble somewhere as you were trying to pick out a book on dummies for politics or something. That is today's conversation. We will be talking post-convention politics and, I guess, pre-election day politics as well. We'll be having one more of this. I think I already signed Pete up for the Sunday just before the election, November 2nd. We'll be doing this one more time. But today, we're going to focus a lot on what just happened in the past 10 days, 12 days.
Yeah.
Let's start. My first question to you is, did anybody win anything at the conventions? Both Democratic and Republican parties went into their conventions looking to solve one major message. Am I wrong about that? It seems to me that the Democratic convention went in to solve the split that they had, and the Republican Party went in to announce their message.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong?
No, I think that's exactly right.
I think certainly on the Democratic side, those are their two biggest concerns.
Now, did anybody win?
I think both sides won. Certainly on the Democratic side, the split was healed, and it was healed amicably. Both the theatrics of, you know, Hillary Clinton making Barack Obama's nomination unanimous, a lot of the discussions that went on within the party seems to have finally put that issue to rest. Although I wonder the degree to which the Sarah Palin candidacy may actually make Hillary Clinton more indispensable to the Obama campaign. I think it's one of the reasons why John McCain chose her, was because it actually means that Obama will have to rely on Senator Clinton more to deliver his message, particularly against Palin. And that's something Obama didn't really want to have to do. I think he wanted to be rid of the Clintons at the end of this convention. Nevertheless, I think that from the Democratic side, the fact that Senator Obama had such a rousing acceptance speech in an unconventional setting of a football stadium worked well. And I think that on the Republican side, if for no other reason than the sheer surprise and shock and awe value of the Palin candidacy, I think McCain got what he wanted, an energized base, a message out there, and a strong push forward with some command of the media outlets.
I would agree, particularly on the Democratic side. I believe both of the Clintons, whatever you think of them politically or your partisan view, they delivered in a way that they needed to deliver. There was particular concern about Bill Clinton because he was reluctant to have any preview of his speech ahead of time, and they both stood up big time for Obama, loud and clear.
I'm in no way the expert in the room, but I would, the Joe guy who watched on TV, I would disagree with that. I thought that the Clintons both came off as, okay, I need to do this, so let me stand up here and, you know, put on my smile and do my best. I never thought that either of the Clintons did, were the amicable losers.
Yeah.
You know, they said the things they needed to say, but neither of them said it with the passion that both of them have been seen giving speeches before. While when you compare that with what Sarah Palin did, she outsmoked Joe McCain McCain by payloads.
Palin payloads? Is that the new... we'll get to that piece. The Clintons that I saw, I thought, and particularly if you think about it from Hillary Clinton's perspective, that's a tough position to be in, to come that close. It was a pretty bitterly contested primary, and it's a difficult position because, look, you want to show yourself to be a party player, to be a team player, and to bring your faction, your supporters in. At the same time, you cannot renounce every single thing you said during the primaries. That's one of these odd things about having to come around and support your previous opponent. You need to take a few things back, but you can't take everything back because then you look like a total political shill and hypocrite. So I thought in the speech that I saw, particularly Hillary Clinton's speech, which I thought struck an excellent tone and right off the front was unequivocal in saying, I'm supporting Barack Obama. I need you to get behind him as well. And then still, allowed her to brag and boast a bit and play up, what she had accomplished, et cetera. I think she earned that right. She earned that right with the 15 million votes that she garnered?
18, actually.
18 million. Very, very different than the Palin roll, which we'll get to. So I thought for the Clintons, who I assume believed early on they had this sewn up, that this was going to be a cakewalk type of primary season for them, I thought they stepped up and did really quite remarably well.
All right,
we can disagree.
That's fine. And again, I'm not the guy who's a dean and teaching this stuff at the school in town. And let's toss out the phone number today. I'm hoping and expecting a number of phone calls on the topic. 979-0919 1877 WNRN Rocks. That's the toll free number if you're outside of the area. 1-877 WNRN Rocks. 979-0919. Who did either party have the advantage of going first or last? Because it seemed like the party going last got to renounce everything that was said at the first party. And I'm just curious. I mean, if you're at a sporting event and it goes to overtime, the football team goes to overtime, you want to go first.
Yeah.
But if you're at the soccer event, you want to kick second. So you know what you're up against. And I'm just curious as to
Well, a couple of things on that. But first, one more objective I think that the Democrats were and Obama in particular were trying to accomplish at their convention, besides bringing the party together, was to more clearly and fully introduce their candidate to the rest of the country. Because Barack Obama, even up until the convention, was still relatively unknown. There are still lots of questions about who is this guy exactly. And I thought they had a extremely well choreographed introduction of the candidate, starting with Michelle Obama's speech and all the family members, and then particularly the biographical film. I think a lot of people have come out with a lot more just general confidence.
Is choreographed a good word, though, in the sense that push my question back again?
I think it is, especially for the Democrats, because past Democratic conventions are far less, at least they come across, is far less organized, far less well put together and well planned. I thought in terms of it being organized, choreographed, and playing out.
But that's almost what he's been accused of, is too choreographed. And am I seeing the real person rather than this man who's a great speaker,
yeah,
rather than a great doer?
That's true. And that's certainly something that has been a concern among critics of Obama, that he's all about the optics and the speeches and there's not as much substance. It is certainly choreographed. And Obama's acceptance speech most definitely was, especially from its choice of venue, the fireworks, everything. Not much happens substantively at these conventions. Pete's right. The Democrats in particular, the one 40 years ago in 1968 being the most notable, can actually become raucous and at times violent. On the other hand, the Republicans have had a long tradition of sort of sleeper conventions. Richard Nixon's renomination in 1972 was so scripted that even the amount of applause and the duration and minutes of applause was written into the script of the convention in order to ensure that there would be no surprises. In terms of your earlier question, you know, who benefits from this? The studies have been done on the sort of post-convention bounce, and it usually spreads anywhere from 5 to 8 percentage points. I mean, Michael Dukakis was ahead by 17 percentage points after his convention in 1988. Of course, that evaporated rather quickly. I think that to some extent, McCain had a slight advantage, only really with the Palin issue of coming in with a surprise and redefining the media coverage by making it more about her. But we still have, as you started off with, 8 weeks to go. There's going to be a long time to let this sort of fall out. The parties are going to campaign aggressively. Messages will be refined and presented. I don't think that come the end of October, the first or second at the convention is really going to matter to the ultimate outcome or to the state of the polls at that point.
Yeah, I think short term it's a fun thing to talk about. I do think McCain, as Jim alluded to, had a slight advantage in knowing who Obama's VP pick was first, because Obama had to make that selection heading into the convention. So that obviously bought them a little time, and certainly it changed his pick. I mean, he thought that through and it gave them that extra time to go with the Palin route. So I think that was a bit of an advantage. Then again, and this is purely, actually not serendipity, it wasn't good fortune, but bad fortune of going second was Gustav, and that required them to shuffle a bit, threw off their choreography and their timing a little bit. And similarly, I mean, we laugh, but Americans have divided attention. We have lots of opportunities to watch different things every night. And you ended up having John McCain giving his acceptance speech the same night that the NFL football season kicked off. And it did, but you didn't know that going into it. And they even adjusted. It had an earlier start time to accommodate that. But there clearly were a little bit fewer eyeballs on McCain because of that. But I think
my understanding is that the Republican convention drew more viewers.
Slightly. So statistically, kind of a wash. I do think that Jim's point very quickly after this, the who went first, who went second, doesn't much matter.
Yeah, and McCain has long been an advocate for short conventions anyway. He was actually extremely happy about what happened with Hurricane Gustav. First, it got Bush and Cheney away from St. Paul, which is something that McCain wanted. And second, it actually did abbreviate the convention a bit. McCain wanted a two-day convention, a speech and then out. Yeah. So this worked, and that's been discussed for a long time, that these conventions are too long. Nobody focuses on them. The attention span of the country can't keep, you know, is certainly turned to other things. So I think just in terms of the structure, McCain got a lot of what he wanted by, you know, a natural event in the form of a hurricane that made his life a little bit easier, especially in dealing with the administration.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, for those who were paying attention to the hurricane issue and who might be undecided in their vote, McCain chartered a flight to send back convention delegates back to their homes in Alabama and Mississippi and Louisiana. I mean, he's like, wow, what a cool guy.
That's right.
You know, let's look what happened to our previous president, and he didn't even go visit them, and this guy's making sure they go home to check on things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they had the advantage to play against the anemic Katrina response. So anything they did was going to come across as much more positive in comparison. So, yeah, that was a positive little event.
All right, 11:16 in the wake-up call as we talk about post-convention politics. Pete Ronan and Jim Sofka, both authors and professors at Federal Executive Institute and some work at the University of Virginia. Please dial us up if you have questions or comments about our discussion, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. As my mother says, I have a sexy telephone voice. Let me see if I can turn that into a sexy radio voice today.
Your mother says that. Interesting.
Well, I don't think she used the word sexy. She says I have a different phone voice.
Good.
As though I'm being, you know, to get what I want. Yeah, I don't think my mother used the word sexy at all now that I think back on it. You know, it's already, you know, 16 minutes into the program, and we mentioned Sarah Palin a dozen times or more. Obviously, between the two conventions, the biggest news bit. Am I wrong on that?
No, I don't think so. No. I was Jim and I were talking. I pulled up my notes from, I don't know, was it a month or so ago back, Rick, when Jim and I were in here and we were talking VP candidates and looking down the list. And it's funny because this was not in a particular order of priority or the order in which we thought they would be selected. But I chuckled when I looked at it in my McCain notes. The first person on the list was Sarah Palin, actually. And indicative of her newness to the national scene, I had to write in phonetically just to remind myself how to correctly pronounce
proper pronunciation.
Her name.
Well,
yeah.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
Joe Scarborough had to do that also at NBC.
Yeah. He was so it was just funny to see this again. No claims to prognostication because we didn't make that call. But it was funny that she was way up here on the top of the list.
You know, as we speak about phonetically, as I'm driving in today and I'm listening to NPR,
yeah.
And they made note that when she gave her speech that the word nuclear was
yes.
spelled out phonetically
yes.
For her on her, you know, on her screen,
yeah.
so that they could further distance themselves
exactly.
from the current administration.
Exactly. Well, I think in terms of convention goals, before getting into too many of the specifics of Governor Palin, that pick, again, tactically had the tremendous advantage of blunting bounce or blunting the very positive attention that the Democratic convention was getting right afterwards. I mean, for the most part, across the board, commentators, bloggers, et cetera, except for the most partisan of hacks, admitted that it was a very beautifully done Democratic convention, coming up with a lot of energy, that Obama's speech, while less eloquent, than before, I'm sure Jim would agree with that, was maybe, and this is my take, the speech he needed to give, a few more specifics introducing himself and then what he's going to do, not just the soaring type of rhetoric and language. But very quickly with the Palin pick, I mean, it overwhelmed Hurricane Gustav in terms of coverage and are talking about this woman, et cetera. So at least short term, that sort of tremendous mini bounce, I'm not sure how that's going to go long term.
All right, it is 11:19 on the wake-up call. I got a caller on the line. Earl, hang on just a second. Let me take care of some station business. I do want to give the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Partly a little bit of fog today and sunny. Highs 85 to 90, a little cooler in the valley, mostly clear tonight. Lows 60 to 65 and even chillier in the valley. Mostly sunny tomorrow. Highs 85 to 90 right now. Fair across the listening area. 66 in the valley, 77 in Lynchburg, 80 in Richmond, 78 here in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for being with us today. You can go back to school in mountain style this year. backpacks, footwear, and clothing from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports. They have over 15 styles of packs from the North Face, and if it's a padded laptop or courier bag you're looking for, Blue Ridge has them too. From Ground, Timbuktu, and Patagonia, Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Barracks Road Shopping Center in Charlottesville and online at brms.com. And there's lots of folks to thank who shopped at Whole Foods Market in Charlottesville this past Wednesday. Thanks to you, we raised about $5,000 to help keep community radio on air. And, of course, we also thank the staff and management at Whole Foods for making it all possible. Keep listening to WNRN for news about other organizations' Whole Foods 5% Days, which happens once every quarter. All right, let me fire all the buttons back in action and bring on Earl. Hey, Earl.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for waiting. What you got?
I was just telling you, interviewer when I called, I watched some of the Democratic convention and some of the Republican. I did get to see Mark Warner speak at the Democratic convention, and I believe he was further off the mark than anybody I've heard speak. He said that it's not about whether you have a R or a D beside your name or anything like that. He said it's not about not about liberalism versus conservatism, which he's way off the mark on that. It is about liberalism versus conservatism. You look at the Hollywood celebrities, how liberal they are. The majority of them have absolutely no morals. You've also got the pornography industry that pumps money to the Democrats. And, they're always supported by the left. Also, U.S. News did an article on Sarah Palin that it was just, I don't know if you saw it or not or read it, but the editor was interviewed the other day, and he was just absolutely called in a bunch of lies.
Earl, I think that's Us, yeah, is what you're talking about. Not U.S. News, but Us.
Okay. My mistake. But anyway, that's what the left, I'm not saying that the Republicans are perfect. That, they don't do stuff that's wrong. Everybody makes mistakes. But as far as, like I said, Mark Warner was really off the mark on his comments.
Hey, Earl, who are you voting for?
McCain Palin.
All right. Well, let me get back to these guys and let's talk about, and so we can talk about some of the things you mentioned.
Okay, thanks, sir.
Thanks, Earl.
Thanks for your call. Earl's made a very good point on Warner's speech. There were a lot of Democrats who were not even that privately upset with Mark Warner.
John Stewart said, he sucks.
Yeah, I know. It was considered the greatest bomb of convention speakers. And the reason why was precisely for what Earl was alluding to, and that is that Warner didn't strike a sufficiently partisan tone. He was trying to be all things to all people, appeal to this sort of broad cross-partisan divide, and he really didn't do a very good job with it. And he's not known as a particularly eloquent speaker.
And he also mentioned in his speech something about, or I don't know if it was in the speech or before or after, but he said, I'm applying for a job at this time.
That's right. He's running. He really was focusing more on the Senate race. Although he spoke and didn't even speak much about Virginia. It actually was a pretty bad speech that most people across the partisan divide would agree to. Although Mitt Romney sort of was the second runner up in terms of his speech at the Republican convention in terms of an ineffective presentation. But this also shows part of what we were talking about earlier, that Warner strayed a little bit far further away than what a lot of the Democratic organizers of the convention wanted by sort of getting his message muddled, by mixing it with Republican themes. And that was probably one of the reasons why his speech was so poorly received, not only its delivery, but its lack of a coherent message. And he certainly, as John Stewart being probably the most impolitic among many critics who have said that this was just not a very good performance.
Well, and the caller's points, too, also raise lots of questions about the perceptions of both parties, those perceptions which can be accurate or inaccurate, that the Democrats are in the pocket of amoral celebrities and the GOP is in the pocket of profit-driven captains of industry, et cetera. And, of course, neither are entirely true. And, in fact, I thought both main candidates, McCain and Obama, really set a tone of trying to reach a little bit across the partisan divide. I mean, they are competing against each other, but I thought two of the best points in their relative in their respective speeches were Senator McCain said early on that, you know, we're going to go at it over the next 2 months. That's the nature of these contests. But despite our differences, much more unites us than divides us. We're fellow Americans, an association that means more to me than any other. And I think one of the best parts of Senator Obama's speech, he talked about patriotism having no party and mentioned that he loves the country. He knows that John McCain does as well. And when he said that the men and women who serve in our battlefields may be Democrats and Republicans and independents, they fought together, they bled together, they died together, and they have not served a red America or a blue America. They've served the United States of America. So I think that actually those two passages from each speech represent kind of the best of both parties.
All right, let's check out Irene. Hey, Irene.
Good morning.
Good morning. Fire away with your questions and comments.
Okay, my question has to do with platforms, okay? As one of your older listeners, my husband and I kind of blow your demographic all to pieces. But so having witnessed many presidential elections over the years and watching the conventions or hearing the news about the conventions, there are always, you know, smoke-filled room meetings having to do with the platforms and this plank of this platform and that platform. And now, in the most recent conventions, probably the past three or four, we don't hear about this anymore. We don't hear about great debates and battles over what will be the plank in the Democratic or Republican Party platforms. What has happened? It's all candidate speeches, endorsements, and so on, but we hear very little now about is it just that the platform positions are so well-known that they're not worth discussing?
Ooh.
That's my question.
All right, I'm going to hang up and let you check it out on the radio, okay?
No, thanks very much.
Oh, and by the way, I don't think that you're blowing out my demographic that much. I mean, just because Les Thames Perdue comes on after me, maybe not. All right, guys.
Irene makes a great point. There is no debate substantively about platforms anymore. The Republicans actually went through all of their order of business approving the platform, I think, in about 40 minutes in the convention, and then it was on to speeches. And that's because no one wants any surprises. And that's one of the reasons why McCain and others, you know, Democrats have said this as well, that these conventions are simply too long. They become sort of bloated. Everybody gets a speaking slot, but there's no real business that happens there. The platforms are ironed out long in advance, and Irene's absolutely right. These have been the Republican plank, particularly on abortion, was so well known that that was the red line McCain could not cross, although he seemed very clearly that he wanted to have Tom Ridge or Joe Lieberman as his running mate. My view is Ridge was probably the top contender for that job if McCain could do what he wanted. That firm plank in the Republican Party on pro-life, anti-abortion is so clear that McCain dared not cross it, even though he was the candidate. So the absence of surprises, the absence of anyone wanting to televise or speak about a nasty floor fight over a platform has rendered these debates to be almost like, you know, the recitations in the old Soviet Politburo, where all of the decisions were well known. The only question was going to be how much and how long people applauded for the news. It's not something that is of substance anymore in the conventions.
Yeah, and I would only highlight what Jim had to say by saying that it is the, whether we like it or not, and we can be critical or not, it's the triumph of the politics of personality, much less the politics of platform. And these conventions are increasingly, and the caller is exactly right, they have evolved into much more political theater. And I don't necessarily take that in a bad way. It is just what they are. It is political showmanship. I think President Reagan probably set the bar as the great communicator and really scripting.
Well, isn't that all part of the 24-hour news as we so hear it nowadays, is we already know what they're talking about because for 24/7, you know, the entire year, that's all that we've heard about these people, the politicians, someone's reaction to something.
Well, and two sides to that, Rick. You can get the information you want about the platforms and the specifics through any number of outlets, including hopping online to do it. As we mentioned before, it's not only a 24/7 news coverage, but it's that competition for our eyeballs. And when the conventions are on, it's not the only thing that's on all the networks now. And that's just what you're going to see.
Right.
You've got all of your cable options, satellite TV, direct TV, what you've TiVo'd, your Netflix, et cetera. So how are they going to engage people? It's not, in their minds, it's not necessarily through platform policy white paper issues.
Right, the platform stuff you can check out on C-SPAN.
Exactly.
Because it's not particularly exciting.
It's putting Governor Schweitzer from Montana up there for a great speech, or it's putting Giuliani up there to give a real sort of red blood, red meat speech. That's what's going to be engaging.
Right. Although he's not that great a speaker, I think. All right, 11:30 on the wake-up call. Feel free to dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks. Thanks for that last call, Irene. Pete Ronayne, Jim Sofka here as we talk about post-convention politics. Let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, or online, brgtshirts.com. All right, guys, we've yet to really get into Sarah Palin and the pick. We talked about the excitement of the pick. One of my questions is, how much effort went into the selection by McCain, because his staff didn't seem to know much about her. There was what was reported as a lot of scrambling on their part. And then the whole piece of news comes out about her. Is underage the right word? I guess she's 17, but she's still
she's
in high school, right? Being pregnant. And then there's that whole piece that even Senator Obama says, you know, children shouldn't be part of the media discussion. So I want to know how much, you know, went into that, because there was lots of reports about how long this went on for Obama and his organization to find the right person. But Palin seemed to come out of almost nowhere.
Well, I think with Palin, there's two. It's a very important topic to discuss, and there's two parts of your question. The first is why Palin, and the second part is how she was rolled out. And on the second, I do think that McCain vetted her. I don't think that this issue of her daughter's pregnancy blindsided him. I think he was prepared for that. The problem was that the Republican media operatives did a terrible job in preparing the groundwork for her announcement. There should have been press packets, including the information about her daughter, ready to go on day one when she was picked. There should have been a dossier that included, you know, everything from her kindergarten photos on up that was ready to go, so it didn't look like it was a revelation in regard to media scrutiny. And if you're going to bring somebody up who is a political unknown on the national stage, you have to expect that the press is going to dig around and look into it. This isn't Joe Biden with a 35-year Senate record or a Hillary Clinton. And so I think from that perspective, I was surprised in the way the Republicans handled it, and it certainly was not a good job, reminiscent of the disaster of the unveiling of Dan Quayle in 1988. In terms of why Palin, I think that it was a much shrewder and calculated move than people either would blame or credit McCain for, depending upon your politics. I think it shows exactly what McCain's about. He sees himself as the modern incarnation of his hero, Teddy Roosevelt. And Palin represents everything that McCain sees in terms of that Western spirit, the old bull moose Republican Party. The photographs of her with her rifle shooting a moose is reminiscent of Teddy Roosevelt out on safari, that sort of frontier spirit. And she is entirely his creature. She is invested in this because, you know, she's governor of Alaska. She was unknown. This isn't Hillary or Bill Clinton with reputations to defend. She can fight tooth and nail because she is completely the political animal of John McCain, and he knows that.
So all right, let me take this call.
Sure.
Because before we get on to round two of that question, we have Murdoch. Hey, Murdoch.
Hi, my name is Sabrina Murdoch-Kitt, and this isn't really on the line of Palin, but it's something that I really hope that the two professors would be interested in discussing, and that's the politics of race in this country right now. It seems as though, from my study of politics, that American politics seems to swing left and right. It's sort of a pendulum. And when things are going well, you know, it's a the presidential election is a referendum on how well things are going, and folks sort of look at the money in their pocket and they're retrospective voters and they go ahead and rubber stamp. And when things are going really poorly, and as we know, so many people disapprove of the current administration and think that the economy is really not on the right track, I'm curious as to why you all think it's so close, if it has to do with latent prejudice or what the other factors you perceive.
All right, thank you. Sabrina, I think we may finish up the current bit and then jump on to yours, all right? Keep listening. That's how I keep people. It's like the radio thing. You know, we're going to give away the tickets later this hour, all right? Hang tight.
It's a cliffhanger.
Okay, thanks.
Well, I'll jump in on the Palin issue. I have a slightly different take on it. I don't think it was as well thought out or vetted as Jim says. John McCain is self-professed kind of gut instinct decision maker, and I think that's reflected in the fact that he didn't meet with Palin to discuss the VP slot until 5 days before her selection. So they think this is she was a dark horse for a long time, and then sort of bolting to the front of the line. I think it's more reflective of gut level decision making. Now that can be kind of the maverick thing, and people can really admire that. It could be cause for concern in terms of do you want that in the White House making those sorts of decisions? I also think that it's a bit more of shoring up his right flank more than anything else. As I listened to Governor Palin's speech, it was remarkably well delivered, not surprising. She's a sports journalist, et cetera. It was filled with all sorts of pretty biting zingers, et cetera. It was a much more, in a way, negative speech than I anticipated, but she does deliver it extremely well and with a smile. But that speech and her pick, her credentials, or really more her background and beliefs, aren't necessarily appealing to the independent voter. You pick Governor Palin to excite the base, and we know going into the convention that there was far less enthusiastic support for McCain as their nominee than Democrats had for Obama as their nominee. So one of the things McCain wanted to do was to fire up his own troops and appeal to the base. And for me, that's what the Palin pick does. It probably does that extremely well. It will remain to be seen if it draws the independents and outside the party voters that McCain probably needs to win.
Well, then let's take on Sabrina's question now. Who wants to jump in on that?
Well, I think the postmortems on the race issue will really be alive depending on what happens, right? It's really hard
right,
to...
Right, well, you know, you take the vote, you do the polls now, and people say, no, of course I'm not prejudiced or racist, Obama is who I'm considering to vote for.
It's difficult to say. I think that... The dynamic in this race, no pun intended, but of continuity and change is what is probably of more concern than race per se. Is there a race element behind the scenes for some voters? I'm sure. But
both parties, it's hope or it's reform.
Yeah, continuity, change, promise versus fight. So there are real differences between these candidates, and I think a relatively untested Obama. He is, even if you're his biggest fan, he is relatively unexperienced. That's a cause for concern for a lot of people. So for me, that classic change versus continuity dynamic is much more pressing right now than race per se. Now, there are others who are a lot more cynical. There was an article by Tim Noah, I believe, on Slate, and he said, look, given all of the structural forces that are in Obama's favor, 8 years of the Bush administration, terrible popular opinion of that administration, the economy where it is, et cetera, all the structural forces are playing in Obama's favor. If he loses after running up to this point a strong campaign, then race has to be that factor. I'm not there yet, but we are going to analyze that big time should he fail.
Yeah, I agree completely with Pete on that. I mean, certainly race is there, and it's probably a subterranean factor in most political quarters. And it's interesting because a lot of leaders in the African-American community were initially Hillary Clinton supporters and went over to Obama a little bit later. It's not sort of axiomatic that all blacks are going to support Obama, and the Palin issue brings it up as well because there's been a lot of...
Is that because he wasn't the Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton?
It was because of his message. He wasn't he wasn't preaching that gospel in the way that previous African American candidates had. And so to assume that, well, blacks are going to support Obama, women must support Sarah Palin, that's not, you know, early polls on this are showing that that's not true, that Sarah Palin, Pete's right, is not going to siphon off large numbers of Hillary Clinton supporters who are overwhelmingly pro-choice and more socially liberal. Palin is far to McCain's right on most political issues. So race is there, and I agree with Pete's assessment that I don't believe that we're going to, that the Obama candidacy is going to either triumph or fail simply because of the fact that he'd be the first African American candidate for president. But it's certainly something that's behind the scenes.
All right, 11:40 on the wake up call. Jim Sofka and Pete Ronayne here as we talk post convention politics. Let me do this. When we come back, I got a couple instant message questions.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, Albemarle Supervisor Ken Boyd wants to revisit the county decision on lights at Gardentown Park and Charlottesville's exile of softball from McIntyre Park. Have you heard of The Lodge? It's been a luxurious private home, a country club, and recently a fraternity house. But now, with an estimated $200,000 needed in repairs, its future is uncertain. Read and take a look in The Hook. And bandmates pay tribute to Leroy Moore. The Hook also missing the musical genius. And let's thank 45fix.com for their support today. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor. From kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting, to decks and siding, it's 45fix.com. Immediate, no obligation estimates available anytime. The number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. And the man, Drew Thompson, just walked in the room. He's here for Les Temps Perdue, the best of 80s and 90s alternative. No Kinks, no Britney Spears, no Tiffany, but you will hear Luscious Jackson, David Bowie, and Oasis. And request, always welcome, Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. All right. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll-free number, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, 979-0919, or WNRN Studio, if you want to fire us up with an instant message question. Okay. This is a double question in regards to Sarah Palin. Does her background as a sportscaster certify her as a viable vice president? Does she condemn homosexuals like a good, God-fearing Republican?
That's a tough one. Well, look, her background as a sportscaster doesn't qualify her per se to be to hold any particular office, but it certainly gives her media and communication skills that are a tremendous plus. And I can't speak to her views on homosexuality. But, you know, in terms of the both of these VP picks, there's sort of a shorthand I like to use. It's sort of a prism. There are five G's that you can use to think about this. One is geography. And sort of comparing the two candidates side by side on the first G, geography, you know, Palin and Biden are awash. I mean, that doesn't bring either party anything in terms of geography. And I really think it further erodes that issue as a major factor.
Are you talking about geography like help them win an important state?
Electoral
kind of
college type geography. The second one is geopolitics, and that was important for both of these. Is important for both of these candidates. Palin is neutral to negative on that for the Republicans. I mean, you know, talking about the fact that, you know, she's up there next to Russia, et cetera. I mean, that's stretching it, right? I mean, to be fair, on the Democrat side, Biden obviously is a plus on national security. That's the main reason why he's selected. The third G is gender, and the Palin pick really solidifies that for McCain in terms of excitement, in terms of ginning up some energy for that, and making him appear even more kind
of
progressive.
But this would be the first time that was even used.
First time
on the Republican side.
On Republican side.
Well, but it's not like there's been, you know, dozens of female, you know, Democratic vice presidential picks.
But that's right, and that's why it's in the plus column.
That's a new G.
It's a, well, it's, it, but it was a factor. It was a factor because of the Hillary issue before. then generation, that's sort of the age of these candidates, and you have the opposites going on here. Biden is 63, meant to balance out age-wise, experience-wise, the younger Obama, and then Palin delivers the opposite for McCain. So I think they're even on that case. And then the fifth one, which is harder to quantify, but it's geniality. And when I say geniality, I mean it in two ways. One is how you come across to the public. Are you congenial? Are you accessible, likable, et cetera? Palin so far, very high marks in that. She can deliver a real stinging blow.
All
with
based
that,
on one night, though, because she has been inaccessible to the media otherwise.
Based on one night. But she has a record as a governor. We've seen her on TV before, and YouTube is littered with this. And she has media skills. She is a mediagenic candidate, to be sure. And the second part of geniality is getting along with the candidate. I mean, you have to have a relationship with there and get along with the presidential nominee. On that account, I don't really know. I think it's neutral at best between Palin and McCain. They don't know each other that well. We'll have to see that evolve. For Biden, he comes across decently, I think, to the public and give a good kind of rip-roaring speech. But also we know that Biden and Obama do get along extremely well.
But so one of the reasons that Biden has been in several presidential elections and dropped out early is because he always seems to smack himself in the head with his shoe.
Well, and that's the sixth G, which is the gaffe. And so far, Biden has been relatively gaffe-free. And I don't anticipate Palin to be full of gaffes either. I mean, that's my expectation. I mean, there are a lot of really strongly left-leaning analysts saying, oh, well, you know, they're hiding her from the media to protect her and wait till the reporters get to sink their teeth into her. I mean, give me a break. The journalists don't sink their teeth into anybody. They don't ask hard questions of any of these candidates. It'll be a very carefully orchestrated. She'll appear on, you know, the Today Show and Larry King. And
The View. Oprah.
But they'll ask the softballs that they normally ask. And this is in general. So this whole notion that once she gets out there, there'll be blood in the water. I don't think so. This is a pretty well-rehearsed individual. She's going to be well-prepped. I think it's going to be a wash.
All right, Pete Ronayne and Jim Sofka, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks.
Yeah, one thing, the Republicans have a tradition of going back to sportscasters. That was Ronald Reagan's first job, actually, and one that he said always helped to improve his communication skills. I just wanted for a minute to go back to the thread that I was talking about with Palin earlier. I mean, John McCain's playbook is right out of the 1912 election of Theodore Roosevelt, where if you listen to his convention speech, I was going back and forth wondering, who is this man running against? Is he running against George Bush or Barack Obama? And the truth is both of them. And it was Roosevelt's Bull Moose insurgency in 1912 that was founded really on three things, the same three things that animate McCain: anti-corruption and anti-established interests, strong national defense, and a Western outdoors libertarian ethos. And in 1912, Roosevelt tried to paint the sitting president, William Howard Taft, as the captive of Republican industrial interests in big business, and Woodrow Wilson, the Democratic candidate, as effete, liberal,
cosmopolitan. We heard that word.
Former president of Princeton. And of course, now history is not very, it would not be in McCain's favor because it's hard to run against two people at once. And Roosevelt, of course, lost the 1912, split the Republican vote, and Wilson wins in 1912. But I see McCain as animated by exactly the same logic and consciously actually, focusing on Roosevelt as his historical touchstone. And I think that in that light, the pick of Palin is also, not only is it to gin up support on the right, as Pete said, absolutely that's true, it's to send a signal that he's not going with an actual establishment Republican. He could have, for example, picked Mitt Romney, who would have given him a more youthful candidate, an expert on the economy and finance. The pick of Palin was to show McCain's, yes, the maverick side, but also where he's coming from in his own brand of Republicanism, which is very different than the Bush-Cheney, largely Southern-based Republicanism. He's hearkening back to his, you know, to not only Teddy Roosevelt, but his fellow Arizonan Barry Goldwater's vision of a more libertarian, more pro-environment, but also anti-corruption.
Right. The Palin pick also, on the flip side of that, can show McCain as not the maverick that he wanted to be, because by all accounts, more recently, he really was leaning strongly for Lieberman.
Yes.
To make that cross-partisan type pick, to really put one's money where their mouth is, because both candidates are talking about, we're going to reach across the divide, we're all Americans, etc. And by all accounts, and analysis, looking back on it, McCain really personally was favoring Lieberman, but for other pressures from the party and the likes of Karl Rove and others, decided ultimately to go more towards the right of the party and shore up that base. So it can work for him either way.
Let me jump back to, I think Sabrina was the one who called up and asked the question about race.
Mm-hmm.
Is the fact that McCain didn't allow Martin Luther King Day in Arizona so many years ago, is that going to become an issue, or have the people who would be upset by that already made their choice in Senator Obama?
I would agree with that, Rick. I think you had the answer right there in your question. I don't see what really raising that issue is going to gain the Obama campaign at this point. Those people are in the tent and are going to vote for you already. I think they want to hang McCain with the Bush years. The whole eight is enough line, I think we're going to hear a lot more about that. They're going to argue for that continuity.
Four more months.
Yeah, that's exactly
I can't remember who made that speech, but that was my favorite.
It was a strange spectacle, but you have to admit, regardless of your partisan stripe, to see, first off, the sitting president of the United States and the current standard bearer of the Republican Party beamed in by video as if he's in some
right.
penal colony somewhere. And in Senator McCain's acceptance speech, he mentioned the president early on once and then said Laura Bush. He didn't even say George Bush. He said Laura Bush, which is an amazing dynamic, whereas, of course, the Obama speech was all about putting that eight-year albatross right around their neck and saying, if you want more of the same. So I think it's those issues we're going to hear about. But also, I mean, it's interesting. What the Palin pick has done has also raised the family issue, which Jim alluded to before, and lots of conversations now about what are American families, what's the nature of family in the U.S. today. Because if you look at the visuals from both conventions of these families that were up there, you know, adopted children in the McCain family, the Palin family with their issues, with the Down syndrome child.
Levi in his suit.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Levi and a teen daughter pregnant. You look at the Obama family story with all of its diversity, et cetera. I mean, it's a tremendous window into the changing nature of family in the United States, and it's really quite a fascinating visual.
All right, let me take this question. We got Dan. Hey, Dan.
How you doing?
Doing all right. Bring it on.
I just on your line of G's analysis. I'm like to know what makes you think that Obama and Biden are such good friends. I mean, just a couple of months ago, Biden was running him down as bad as anybody else.
Well, again, I mean, those are part of the perils of politics, and these individuals are often politicians run against each other, and they can still be quite friendly behind the scenes. But the fact of the matter is,
it's phony.
Well, you know, they do share share the senator's restroom.
Well, I mean, the word phony is a tough way to put it, and there is part of it. But like I said before, you know, Hillary Clinton ran strongly against Obama and then has to stand up there and say good things about him. John McCain ran powerfully against George Bush and vice versa, and there they are pledging mutual support. So phony, yes, but that also is part of the political game, and that's no different than with the founding fathers up till now. They would savage each other on certain issues, and then in the name of party, in the name of winning, et cetera, come back together. But there clearly has been a closer relationship. I mean, let's face it, Biden was out very early on in Iowa. Most Iowans didn't even know he was running. So he was out of the race pretty early on and allowed them to then develop this relationship.
Well, you can be sure that all those clips from those debates and all that stuff are going to be used to great, you know, effect by the Republicans, just as they're using all those comments by Hillary, you know, with respect to Obama's lack of credibility and experience and, you know, that whole nine yards. And one of the geniuses about McCain's pick of Palin is that there's nothing like that out there.
Yeah. Well, it's
right.
going to be.
Thanks, Dan. I'm going to let these guys get into it.
It'll be interesting because there will be fewer clips of Biden saying negative things about Obama. Number one, because he was out so early. So in those earlier stages of the primaries, their target collectively wasn't necessarily each other. It was the Bush administration. So in fact, Biden has some wonderfully powerful foreign policy, national security statements about the GOP and the Bush administration. So that's the first thing. I think the second piece on Palin, you're right. You won't have Palin saying negative things about McCain because they didn't face each other in a primary contest. But there will be other difficult things for that campaign to deal with. Just one quick example from her acceptance speech talking about selling the plane on eBay. It was a great line, very populist line. Now, I got rid of that private jet. I put it up on eBay. Well, yes and no. They did put it up on eBay. It didn't sell on eBay, and it was sold for a loss. So there are going to be other statements of hers that are going to be examined pretty quickly. For example, saying, I really didn't think much about the war in Iraq until 2007. There are other statements that she made not knowing she would be in the national spotlight.
Yeah, Dan makes a really good point. I mean, for the most of the Republic, vice presidents and vice presidents have actually hated each other. I mean, Lyndon Johnson and JFK were sort of overt in their mutual dislike and suspicion of each other. And the one advantage of Palin, I think Dan makes a good point, is that with McCain has sort of created her from whole cloth, as it were, as a vice presidential candidate, there's going to be much less of a track record that could be used in uncomfortable media moments, as Pete was alluding to. Whereas Biden, a concern about him all along is his tendency to run off at the mouth and say some unfortunate things. He hasn't done that so far in the campaign, except for the minor point of getting her title wrong. He referred to her as the lieutenant governor of Alaska rather than the governor. But this is, in the big scheme of things, relatively minor. But it's not personal. Personal chemistry between a candidate and a vice president can help, definitely. But it's actually been the exception rather than the norm. I mean, Thomas Jefferson had his vice president arrested and tried for treason in 1807.
And while it's fun to talk about, and I think we discussed this a month or so back, it garners great attention. It's its own sort of hurricane to talk about VP picks. In the end, most studies show that it has marginal impact at best. People vote the top of the ticket, and that's what will prevail come November.
All right, let me take a moment and thank Alt Energy of Charlottesville for their support. They provide professional design and installation of solar energy systems in Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Alt Energy solar systems can pay for themselves and reduce your carbon footprint. More can be found at altenergyincorporated.com. And in case you didn't know, you are listening to WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar, Amherst, Lynchburg. All right, guys, quick questions left. It is 11:56, just a few moments. So tone down the professorship.
The four-minute drill?
Yeah. debates. What's going to happen with the debates? How many will we have? Who works best in which system?
The candidates have agreed to 3 presidential debates and 1 vice presidential debate. And obviously there was a debate about the debates in the sense that obviously John McCain wanted more joint appearances with Barack Obama in town hall formats, which he does particularly well at. Obama prefers the lectern, the podium. He feels that he has a more commanding presence. I think that the debate format is going to be pretty similar to what's been used in past debates. There'll be a lot of prearranged questions by a pool of journalists. I don't think you're going to have any surprises in terms of how the debates are structured. Most folks would agree that Obama seems to have enjoy that sort of discussion and debate behind the podium more than McCain, who's a little bit more folksy. I'm not so sure in this campaign, my own personal prediction, that the debates are going to matter much unless there is either a colossal gaffe or an unforeseen world event. I think that the positions, as we talked about with, I think it was Irene's comment earlier on, are so well known and have been hammered out in advance that the debates almost become as rote as the conventions. They just don't determine.
Next question. Short time. We got time for 2 more. Financial needs and current base. Pete?
Financial needs?
Yeah. In terms of raising money for...
Well, Obama is doing great as always. The Palin pick has infused McCain with more financial life as well. I forget the exact number I saw, but since that pick was made, there has been money streaming into his coffers. So they're both going to be solid. This has really, again, energized the base, and that's meant more dollars.
All right. Outlook in Virginia.
That's a tough one.
Because everyone says we were always a red state, now we're purple.
Yeah, at least part of the state is part of the state is purple. I still see a slight Obama lean. If Hillary Clinton had been the nominee, I would say the opposite. But I think I say Virginia goes Obama.
All right. One last comment from each of you. You get 20 seconds to make it.
Go ahead, Jim.
I would say that the main thing to watch as we're moving forward is foreign policy, particularly the Iran question. I said this a couple of months ago. I think that that's, and we saw with Georgia, this swung things around. McCain was able to use it to his advantage. I think that's what you want to watch, is the external action rather than internal.
And I think when we're talking about the VP debates, I would argue actually advantage Palin. I think they will much better manage expectations for Sarah Palin going into that debate. And Biden has to be very careful not to come across too strong or being a bully.
So we'll see you guys just before the election, November 2nd. I think the election, that makes the election November 4th. Please register if you haven't already. You got about 3 weeks, maybe four, to get your stuff together. And next week, Lee Channing in the studio. Maybe we'll ask her how things are going with politics. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Rick.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.org. The wake-up call is produced by Michael Strickland. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.